Welcome back to the latest episode of Between the Stripes TV's League of Ireland Life Story series. And I'm delighted today to be joined by a Dundalk fan with a remarkable story. That's Danny Waters. Between the Stripes viewers, you'll be well familiar with our League of Ireland Life Story series. We like to have players and coaches from within the league, but we love to have supporters and we love people with great stories as well. And Daniel certainly fits the bill there, as you'll hear in the next while. Daniel, how are you today?
I'm good, Kieran. Thanks very much for having me on today.
No worries at all. Good to see you kitted out in the Dundalk gear, and we'll have a chat about Dundalk a little bit later on. But we have you on today because, as I said, you've got a remarkable story. I suppose I might as well just let you in here and tell us a little bit about your history.
So the story I'll tell is about a kidney donation and between myself and my sister, Aoife. So Aoife's my older sister. She's 2 years older than me. And about 10 years ago, she was diagnosed with chronic kidney disease. So what that essentially meant that at some stage in her life, she would have to have a kidney transplant to help her keep enjoying life as such. So at the time, I was in my early 20s at the time, and I always said I would get tested, but you can't actually get tested for kidney donation until the recipient drops below about 15% of their kidney function. So that happened with Aoife around summer, autumn 2019. So Aoife's kidney function dropped, progressively dropped over the years, but it dropped quite below the threshold. Time, myself and her husband, Mark, we put our names forward to be tested by the Beaumont. So myself and Mark went up and we were both tested, and just initially it was just blood tests and so on. So then they came back to us about 6 weeks later, and I got a phone call from the nurse to say that I was what was known as a full house match. There's six specific indicators and I had all six, which in one way means that me and Aoife would nearly be genetically identical twins essentially. So then I had, obviously, Mark, I think, had two out of six at the time. So I took the decision at the time that absolutely I'd put my name forward. She's my only sibling. So we have a bond, which it can be breakable at times, but we get through. So I put myself forward, and then there was a number of other various tests and so on. And then my previous medical history and that. And over, that was in October. And then around December, I went forward for scan, a number of CT scans and other scans just to make sure everything was all right. And then we got news in early January. So just around Christmas, Aoife was getting ready to finish up work. She's a law lecturer, so she was getting ready to finish up work. So then in early January, got the phone call from the hospital to say, yeah, everything's gone forward. And the earliest date that they could give us was the 10th of February. The next alternative date was actually would have been May 2020. So I work in the civil service, so contacted my boss first of all to say about this stuff, and they were grand about the whole thing, very supportive of it. So I said, absolutely, yeah, go ahead the 10th of February. So yeah, looked after myself for the next month or so, and as did Aoife. And then we actually got a phone call the week before, 2 weeks before the 10th, actually, just to say, unfortunately, for another family, a vacancy had come up on the 3rd of February if we were ready to go. Unfortunately, we weren't ready to go at that stage, but we held off for the week and went in the 10th as planned. In the 9th as planned. We went for a final meal with our family and like the Last Supper nearly into Eddie Rockets locally in Dublin, and then back to the hospital, and two of us stayed over. And then the next morning we had the operation on Monday the 10th, and thankfully, touch wood, and it's been a great success for both of us. Aoife is absolutely flying. It's a new lease of life, would be an understatement to say, and thankfully I'm doing well too. So
yeah, that's the main thing. That's absolutely brilliant to hear. I suppose when people hear of organ donations, that's probably one of the main questions they have, is how does it affect the recipient, the donor as much as the recipient?
I have to say, thankfully, it went absolutely brilliant for me. There was a slight complication in relation to a hernia, which I had a follow-up operation on, but again, it was only a minor thing, and thankfully, everything's going well. We can't complain at all. I was off work for 12 weeks afterwards due to it's a serious operation in your abdomen, but I was back sport, and so obviously with COVID and that, things were held up, but no, it makes no impact essentially on my life whatsoever, because I was told you can actually for healthy individuals, they can actually function with 50% of one kidney. So I still have one full functioning kidney. So there's no problems on the health side at all with that, thankfully.
It's brilliant stuff. And I know, I look where I came across your story, I better tip my cap to the lads over on the Town End podcast, one of the multiple Dundalk FC podcasts on the go at the minute. But fair play to them. I actually came across your story. I was out for a walk today and I had ran through all of the other League of Ireland podcasts. So I said, with everything going on at Dundalk at the moment, I better have a listen to some of their podcasts. And I came across your story there. So it was absolutely brilliant to hear. And that's why I wanted to speak to you a little bit more, and especially with the week that's coming up. It is Organ Donor Week, and we'll touch on that again in a minute. But I suppose you're slightly lucky as well with the timing of things, because COVID was only around the corner and those sort of operations and procedures were shut down for a long time.
Yeah, so just about, I think it was about three or four weeks after we had the operation on the 10th of February, the ward itself is actually, all the individuals who receive kidneys are on immunosuppressants and that, and certain drugs for the rest of their lives. So they're extremely high risk. So actually, to get into the ward in the first place, is before COVID had hit as such, you had to be swiped into the ward. You can't just walk into the particular ward. So it was shut down for about three weeks after we had our operations, and that wasn't just living donor, it was just living donors, apology. And then that scheme didn't come back into place, I think, until June or July of 2020. So you're talking three or four. If I had waited for the original date of May, God knows when we would have actually had the transplant, and God knows what's the one thing just to note as well, an awful lot of patients would be on dialysis beforehand, and before they get a transplant, a suitable transplant. And thankfully, in our case, it happened so quickly, Aoife never actually had to go on to dialysis, which was obviously a huge benefit as well.
Yeah, that it must be very, very tough for families at the moment going through that, and with the uncertainty over COVID. So, look, as I said, it is Organ Donor Week coming up next week, and I know this has been quite topical in the news recently, because obviously in Scotland now it's shifted to an opt-out option as opposed to an opt-in option. And I'd be signed up to a couple of football newsletters over there. I know I got one from Hibs the other day, and they were kind of getting behind the whole campaign as well, which is great to see. Is it something that maybe we need to look at here in Ireland as well?
Yeah, I think on the GAA side of things, Joe Brawley would have been very big on this particular instalment. And I think he's also campaigned down in the south as well in relation to it, about changing from an opt-in to an opt-out, whereas by everyone automatically would opt in, God forbid anything should ever happen to you, that if your organs were still in a possible to be used, that they could be used. So it's absolutely something that would be great to look at down here as well.
Should have got Joe Brawley on. We wouldn't kick him off. Wouldn't kick him off like some people. But as well as that, I just want to point out, most of our viewers will know that the option to support Between the Stripes through the Buy Me a Coffee tab on our website. What we're going to do now, any donations we receive from today until the 3rd of April, which coincides with Organ Donor Week, we are going to pass on to the Irish Kidney Foundation. I know you were telling me beforehand, they were a huge, huge help to both yourself and Aoife.
Yeah, so the transplant itself took place in the Beaumont Hospital in Dublin, and on the grounds of the Beaumont, the Irish Kidney Association, so the website's www.ika.ie, they have a premises on the Beaumont, on the Beaumont's property. So at the time, what they were doing was they have beds and different rooms and that, so on, that individuals can go and use it if their family members or themselves are involved in either dialysis or in the transplant side of things. So, you know, we live in Dundalk, but my sister my niece, she's 3.5 now, she would have been just under 2.5 the time it happened. So to save having to bring her up and down, some of my family members were able to stay in on the Irish Kidney Association premises on the Beaumont, which was great, which meant that they could pop over to us in the hospital as required or as needed, and it was just great to be able to do that. And it's you've mentioned Organ Donation Week, so the current slogan for that they're using is the gift of life, pass it on, in relation to promoting organ donation and so on, and not just for kidneys, for other organs as well. And they've also a campaign which you can see on the various social media platforms in relation to lighting up various buildings around Ireland green for the week, just to highlight the whole organ donation process.
Yeah, because again, when I listen to some of the UK sports stations as well, they've got a campaign running at the moment where they're encouraging families to talk about organ donation in the future and the likes. So it's great to see these campaigns now starting to make their way to Ireland, because it is probably a serious conversation. I know people don't like having them. I know I'd certainly want to shy away from that type of thing, but it's very important that people do discuss it. So it's great to have you on today, Daniel, to tell us about your story and to, I suppose, just get more information on it and how it works, and to highlight some of these great organizations. So as I said, here at Between the Stripes, if you head to our website, everyone, it's betweenthestripes.net. You'll see down at the bottom of the website an option to buy me a coffee. It actually might be buy me a beer. I've been a bit mischievous there. But if you click on that and you'd like to make any sort of donation, anything we get over the next week, we're going to pass it on to the Irish Kidney Association. But Danny, it'd be unfair to let you go without having to chat about Dundalk. You were obviously on the Town End podcast the other night, and I don't think any of the lads were too happy with the performance against Finn Harps. And we're recording this here on Monday, and we'll be recording the new episode of Between the Stripes LOI podcast tomorrow. And I know we're going to be having a big, big discussion about Dundalk. We've got James Rogers coming on to have a chat with us as well. But what on earth is going on at Dundalk?
There just seems to be a lot going on from one week to the next. There seems to be an awful lot going on, and it's been like that for the last year to 18 months at least. So it's difficult. One of the things that was mentioned the other evening on the other podcast was the Town End, was in relation to, you know, there's a lot of mix coming in. So if you go back to what we call the glory years from say 2013 up until 2019. Even last year, we obviously won the FAI Cup last year as well. There was a very sought, the majority of them players were for League of Ireland. They knew what, they came through the League of Ireland, they knew what to expect within the League of Ireland. And then the lot of them had played, there was a structure and stability there for a long time under Stephen Kenny and then under Vinnie Peart as well. So it just seems now there's been a lot of change and a lot of players coming in, also from outside of Ireland, and mightn't necessarily. Again, this obviously has its own issues in bringing up the speed on the way football is played here as such. So I think that's one of the major things, is that there's the lack of cohesion between players, the constant change in that, which under Kenny, I know he's got his own issues at the moment, but there was one or two changes every year for the first couple of years, and it was a very solid team. That now it's very difficult to pick the team on a weekly basis, yeah. Nearly at this stage, and it was the same towards the end of last year, not taken away from our great run in Europe and so on, but it's difficult at the moment. And I'm sure James Rogers will be able to pinpoint a few more areas as well.
Yeah, because I know the lads made the point just prior to that great season in 2016, Dundalk only brought in two players. You'll have to refresh my memory on those two players, who they were. One was Robbie Benson.
It was Ronan Finn, though. The 26, Paddy McElhenney, I'm trying to think back.
McElhenney and Benson. So as you said, two players that knew exactly what the league was about, playing kind of in a similar brand of football. Obviously, McElhenney had been there previously, so he knew exactly what it was about. But, that was his first spell. He was coming in from Derry, wasn't he, in 2016? But, you know, again, playing in a team that liked to play good football. So bringing in players from outside of the league is not just that they have to learn a new culture of football. It's also they're coming into a totally different environment at Dundalk. And maybe Dundalk at the moment are signing good players, but are they signing players to actually fit the system? And is there a system?
It's hard to see if the system at the moment. I know maybe playing with two wing backs at one stage, or three at the back, or going then back to a traditional four at the back. And there just seems to be a lot of change. And again, I'm constantly referencing, but even going back, this year is the first year really, I suppose, the back five that Kenny originally had, or in his went throughout his career. Mm-hmm. When you look at Rogers, Massey, Gannon, Gartland, and then Boyle went away, and then he came back. But there was a core. Yeah. Definite body there, and then you'd Chris Shields in front of them, who's matured or over the last number of years an exceptional player. Like, that was a very solid team. It's you're watching it now and you just don't see that. And then the creative spark the other night in midfield just didn't seem to be there either. As I said, Hoban had two good shots. Well, he made an overhead he was very unlucky with at one stage, and then he also had a diving header, which I think went straight at the keeper. He was unlucky as well. They're obviously the small things that could have changed the game and would have been a 3-2 otherwise, but the system just seems to be, even then at the very end, to bring McMillan on, it's the first time we've had two recognised strikers. It's not a way that Dock have really played over the last number of years either. So obviously desperation was creeping in, but it's just hard to see the system.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be at the game the other night, obviously doing a bit of work for Between the Stripes. And the one thing I took away from it, I was just looking out at the pitch and I was saying, my God, the talent on this pitch for Dundalk and even on the bench, just so many incredible footballers that you're lucky to go out and be able to see in the flesh. But putting them all together, it seems to be an issue at Dundalk at the moment. They don't seem to have a real cohesion. There doesn't seem to be any great kind of plan. As you said, when Kenny sent them out, when Vinnie Part sent them out, you knew exactly what way they were going to play. You're just not sure with this current Dundalk team.
No, you're not. And then you see, it was good to see Michael Duffy back the other night. Obviously, he's an exceptional player. Again, he was double marked the other night. And like when that happened, though, it didn't seem to be a huge amount of other creativity coming on the pitch at all. Again, some of the positives I would take away from the other night, I think the young Ryan O'Kane looked very, very, very promising.
Looks a phenomenal player, but you'd have to question why he hasn't been given his chance.
Well, that's it now. It'll be interesting. And like you're looking now at Rovers on Friday night. Is that a game to throw a 17-year-old in? I think he's 17, sorry. To throw him into it. It's up in Tala as well.
You'd imagine, though, the President's Cup was the perfect time to throw him in. It's a game that doesn't have a huge amount on the line. It was great for Dundalk to win it. But O'Kane in the pre-season games I watch, I was saying to everyone, my God, what a phenomenal young talent this lad is. And if he keeps playing like this, he'll surely be pushing for a starting position in the team despite his age. So you would have thought if the management team were going to start him and see, as you said, against a team like Rovers, that would have been the perfect time to do it. So it's probably difficult to see them doing it now in a big league game.
It is, and then especially look at they've also got now our new South Korean player in as well, Han. There's competition for places there. But again, as you say, from going back earlier, the formation and the system that's going to be there. Are we going to go three at the back, or three centre-halves at the back, or two back to a normal 4-4-2? What way does O'Kane fit into that formation then, if that's the way it goes? I'm not hopeful about Friday night, unfortunately.
And then on top of all of that, of course, you've got a goalkeeper who looks devoid of confidence all of a sudden. He had a great night in Tala. You thought the President's Cup would give him plenty of confidence. Sligo's distribution was very poor, I thought. He made some good saves, but if you're playing for a team like Dundalk, you have to be good with your feet as well. And we've seen in the game in Oriel, he is not good with his feet at the moment, whether he can develop that into his game or not. He walked out by me the other night when I was doing interviews, and I was looking up at him thinking, my God, this lad is an absolute unit, but he looks very, very suspect under a high ball.
Yeah, playing out from the back, obviously that cost us a goal the other night with the bad touch, but that's the way Dundalk have played traditionally over the last 7 or 8 years. That's the way they've played. They played out from the back. But you're looking at it the other night, and even when we're still playing out from the back, never once, and Finn Hobbs knew this, so they were pushing up. There was no need for them to sit back and let Dundalk play out, which was because there was never the option of the high ball over the top or anything like that, or go route one to Hogan, who's obviously well capable of holding his own up front, along with McMillan. So the under the high ball has cost us in Europe over the years as well, and playing out from the back has cost us in the big European games over the years. But it's costing us now in what should be seen as a routine league game. Those sort of problems are affecting us, and you'd imagine Rovers were watching that. They'll be pushing up on us every single chance they can.
As you said, this is nothing new, this style of play at Dundalk, and they've always played out from the back. But the difference was, it's probably unfair on the current management team to keep harping back to the Kenny Rain. But at the end of the day, when you take a job like this, that's simply what comes with the territory. You're going to be held up to the high standard that was there before. Previously, when Dundalk played this system of playing out from the back, if teams did push up on them, they'd play it in behind to somebody like a Duffy. He'd be into space, into Hogan. Game over in a matter of seconds. Whereas teams now, they're more confident to actually push up, like we've seen with Hearts before. I don't think you would have seen them do that a couple of years ago. They would have sat on the edge of their own box, but they knew Dundalk were probably, they had a couple of errors in them. They pushed up and they forced those errors, and they won the game off the back of that.
Yeah, as you say, the pushing up in that, there was no second option, or even then it was getting to the stage where Daniel Fleury was bursting out of defence a few times, but it's only a matter of time before those things are, before you're caught again.
Well, he was almost caught, wasn't he, earlier in the game? And in credit to Abebe, dug him out of trouble big time, but then a few minutes later, Abebe goes and makes that awful mistake.
Yeah, and I think the boys mentioned the other night, at one stage, Daniel Fleury was bursting through the, bursting in from the right wing on to, into the opposition box, which is not what you want to see your centre-half, especially if you're only playing with two. If you're playing with three centre-halves back, maybe you might get away with it, but that's not what you, that you have to get the basics of the defending right first of all, and then you can focus on the more finesse pieces like that of the ball playing going forward and so on, but the basics have to be there.
If Dundalk can't turn this around in the next couple of weeks, because they've got some really tough fixtures, they've got obviously Rovers up next, as you mentioned, and then they've got games against Bowes and Pats. I mean, this could be a very small points total to start the season, and we know what happened last year when Rovers got a lead, it just wasn't for catching. So where will the buck stop at Dundalk if results don't turn around in the next couple of weeks?
You'd imagine it would be very quickly. Something will happen. Like, again, going back to Vinnie Peart, after the break, after the COVID break last year, he obviously, there was a very tough run, a very poor run of form by Dundalk, and that ultimately cost him his job, but to, and the European loss as well. But it's another couple of non-wins as such, if, and Dundalk are going to be in serious trouble. They're after investing, I'm assuming, a fair amount of money and bringing a lot of these players into the country as well.
And it looks like more players still to come, if reports are to believe that Zahibo isn't far away.
That's good. Yeah, the former Valencia player, yeah. So it's those boys aren't coming in, I'm assuming, for peanuts as such. There'll be a few pounds involved. So it's going to be the buck has to stop somewhere, as you say.
Like with the level of investment that's been made there in the squad, let's not beat around the bush. Qualifying for Europe and maybe winning the cup, I don't think that's good enough. With the level of investment that's there, as good as Shamrock Rovers are, you have to be pushing them very close for the title, if not winning it.
Oh, you'd imagine so, yeah. Like that's the platform Dundalk should be on at this stage, considering the last 7 or 8 years. They should be pushing for the title, if not winning it. And again, European qualification isn't necessarily even good enough these days. It's getting through a couple of rounds and aiming towards that's where the money is in reality, especially to recoup the outlay that would be on the current squad. That's where they should be aiming for. Obviously, we got into Europe last year, which was brilliant. But we had the safety net of being the Champions League qualifiers first last year, and then it fell out of that, and then through the Europa League qualifiers. We don't have that safety net this year. One bad performance in Europe and we could be out.
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure there certainly to deal with. But again, it's the territory of managing and playing for a club like Dundalk. And again, when you're bringing in these quality of players, you really have to deliver the goods. And at the moment, it's just not happening for whatever reason.
No, and I have to say, just the wee bit that I've seen of Hand the other day, playing a few decent balls and playing a great free kick towards the end as well. You've Perez in there as well. You know, you'll have Sonny back, hopefully. Sorry, I'm not sure if he'll actually be back for Friday now.
No, he's suspended for the next two games.
And then the Latvian right back as well, he's to come back into the team as well. So there, as you mentioned, like there's an awful lot of talent there. All of a sudden we've got internationals that wouldn't necessarily have had previously, so that's another but it's obviously a problem at the moment because of the international window and we're missing them, but that you would hope that, I think it was made in a few other forums as well about the lack of pre-season games. Dundalk only had one or two pre-season games. Considering, going back to the original point about the so much change in the team, you'd imagine that they would have needed a couple of games together.
Of course, they did have a game against Derry lined up, but it was cancelled due to injuries. Strange, you know, you'd think there still was enough bodies, but obviously somebody maybe in the sports science side of things there said, you know, it might be the best time to play a game. Some rest and recuperation might do them well. But as you said, when you've got this many players coming in, as much time as possible on the pitch together is surely ideal.
Well, that's what you'd be hoping for. And again, in the first 60 minutes of the President's Cup, you know, Dundalk were in it. I won't say we were better than Rovers in the first 60 minutes, but we were absolutely in it. The last 30 minutes, we were obviously under the cosh with the red card and that. But I thought there might be some promising things again, but it was only one game. I think this Friday night, there's a lot more on the line, and I think that will be a more clearer position of where Dundalk currently are. And on the base of the last two performances in the league, I wouldn't be too hopeful, unfortunately.
Yeah, look, we're talking about dealing with pressure. This is big pressure on Friday night, and I think a lot of people are looking forward to sitting down and watching the game. But Danny, it's been absolutely brilliant speaking with you. Your story is amazing. Again, for our viewers, and we'll make this available as a podcast as well. So our listeners, if you'd like to make a donation to the Irish Kidney Association, head to betweenthestripes.net, click on the Buy Me a Beer or Buy Me a Coffee tab. Donate as much as you'd like to, and we'll pass it on anything between today, the 29th of March, and the 3rd of April. We'll pass on to the Irish Kidney Association. And don't forget, it is Organ Donor Week as well. So maybe it's a good time to have those conversations around the family table. But Danny, again, brilliant speaking with you. Thanks so much, and enjoy the game on Friday.
Thanks very much, Kieran. All the best.